The old cliche, when I point a finger at someone else, three fingers are pointing back at me, is exciting because I recognize the me at whom I am pointing three times more. What a privilege and a responsibility. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campbell, California, bringing you the instant inspiration. See how that goes up and down? That shows it's really working. The old cliche, when I point a finger at someone else, three fingers are pointing back at me, is exciting because I recognize the me at whom I am pointing the three fingers at. What a privilege and what a responsibility. Yeah. We've been talking recently about the idea of the world and bringing peace on earth and bringing harmony and right action and truth and goodness into all of life. And we've been saying, you know, there's peace on earth, and we're pointing our finger at different countries and saying, there's peace on earth in Tehran and in Iran and in Iraq and in France. Well, you know, I was reading the Business Week magazine, and Business Week I find to be a very interesting barometer of world affairs. And for a few weeks, France was going down the skids, right straight down the skids, economically and everywhere else. And leading the way was Switzerland and Germany and the Netherlands and all the rest of the Euro states. They were just having themselves a ball on the roller coaster. And the report was that the economic condition was not very good, not very stable. Except that a few nations did not want to change. They said, that's stable. We will stand behind it. And they stood behind it. And then all of a sudden, it became stable. Now, no one gave the nations that stood behind it the credit for stabilizing it. They just said it was luck. You know, it was a good chance, choice that was made. But if you have the capacity to read into these things, which it doesn't take a great ability to do it, but if you have the ability to read into it, you'll see that it's the nations that stood behind the economic system of Europe that gave the euro dollar and the euro system the stability it needed and which it has today. Now today, France has gone like this here, like it's sailing off the end of the scale, and it's doing just beautifully. And its government is taking a hold very well. And the people are spending like crazy. They're doing great things. Their stores are just showing remarkable strides in retail sales. And the same is happening in Germany. Germany not only stabilized, but it's just soaring into the heavens. And this is happening in Britain isn't taking off as quick because Britain is not playing the whole game. See, Britain only plays a half a game, a half ass, and that's all they're getting. If Britain would play all the way, become totally Euro, it would have the unique success that all the rest of the country has. I digress for a moment. When I'm talking to people and I'm sharing with people, I will say, okay, now you are an alligator. And you say, I am not an alligator. And I said, yeah, pretend you're an alligator. I am not an alligator. Well, pretend. Well, I am not a, well, come on, play the game. Just play the game that you're an alligator. Now, how would an alligator act? And it's amazing how quickly they play the game and how quickly they become the alligator, and they do things that you'd never thought of an alligator doing, and truly they do it because they know more about an alligator than they let on. Well, if Britain would have played the game, it knows more about alligators than anybody ever dreamed it knew, and it would have been tippy-top of the rocks, because it would have set the program up in a successful way for itself. Britain is going like this, you know, pointing fingers at other people, saying, you're not cooperating with the
European market.
With the Euro market program, you're not cooperating with it. And when Britain says you're not cooperating with it, you know, what's happening, you know? Mm. Three fingers are pointing right back at it. And all the other nations, they're not saying you're not cooperating. They're saying, hey, look at our market share goal. We're doing just wonderful. And you see, this is the wonderful thing. They're not even pointing fingers. They're just getting on the toboggan and riding. And this is a wonderful thing to do. Other nations of the world are doing similar things to this and harmonizing with it. And I wouldn't be surprised if some point in time we have, I don't want to say the word, it'd be totally misunderstood, but if I'd say there was a universal nation, like the United Nations, like the United States of all nations of the world, you know, but it had nothing to do with the United States. It's that they're all one large, harmonious government working together for the good of the people. You see, politics will never work when politics is for a country. Because the government of the country wants their show of power to be strong. Now, why is Gray Davis, the governor of California, getting the boot by the people? He's getting the boot by the people because he was there at the wrong time and in the wrong place, experiencing the wrong thing. The government, the finances of the stock market and everything else just took a big deep dive just at the time he was setting his program in motion. Now, if he had set that program in motion 2 years before, it would be a fabulous success. And if he would set that program in motion now, he would be a fabulous success. Well, he set the program in motion a year and a half to 2 years ago, and it was not the good timing. Now, he did everything honestly for the people. I'm sure he was sort of padding his own pocket in certain times, because they all do. But if he didn't, then he really should be commended, because he put his name on the line for the benefit of the state, and it was just a bad timing. So, when we point fingers at people, we best be real careful. Real careful. How many people in the United States made bad investments during the time of the low stock market? Millions. Millions. How many states were just about going under because of that? Many of them. Why is California taking the rap for it so heavily? Because it was making a big step. And in making such a big step, it had, so to speak, all its eggs in one basket. And if you stumble with all your eggs in one basket, you have a tough time, you know, because you lost the whole load. We have a wonderful world that we have here. If we just have the, not hindsight or foresight, if we just have the ability to take the long view, and the long view is neither hindsight nor foresight, the long view is believing in yourself. If you believe in yourself, you will clean your room tonight. If you believe in yourself, you will wash your socks tonight. If you believe in yourself, you will make your house orderly tonight. Because if you believe in yourself, that means you plan on being here tomorrow. But if you don't believe in yourself, oh, I'll probably die tonight, so why wash my socks, you know? I'll probably die, so why put my room in order? It would make no difference at all, you know? I'm not going to be here to care. But if you care, if you live in an orderly mind, an orderly country, an orderly world, an orderly house, then you are planning on being here tomorrow. You are planning on living another day. I said to Cielo, I said, do you want to live or die? And I know she wants to live. But she says, live. And I said, well, act like it. Come on now, sit up there a little bit and give me a little bit of smile. And she gave me the biggest smile, but she couldn't sit up because she was just, you know, after an operation and recuperating a little bit, and she was just too weak. But she did everything she could. And then she waved goodbye with her little finger at me, you know. That's as much as she could make move. But she was fantastic. She was just fantastic. She wants to live. She has every expectation of living. Now, will she live? Mm-hmm. Of course she'll live. Now, what if she died?
She still lives.
She still lives, but she's not going to die. Now, I think I must change my tactics a little bit and not ask a person whether they want to live or die. Now, does anyone have my answer for that, that I should give for that?
Well, the answer is, many have a fear of dying. So they prefer to say, no, better to live, so I know I can still do something, I can enjoy the life.
I don't get the point what you're wondering.
Maybe you should ask, do you want to live here or do you want to live?
Well, you all are playing an interesting game. If I say to you, do you want to live or do you want to die? That's none of your business. That's none of your business, whether you want to live or whether you want to die. Now, think about this. It's none of your business.
That's true.
I am the creator of the world in which I have created you, and I'm creating you living. I am creating you whole and perfect. You have no choice but to do as I bid you in my world. Now, am I the master of my world? Am I the creator of my world? If I'm the creator of my world, am I playing games with you? You want to live or you want to die? You think you got a choice? You don't have no choice. You're going to live. In my world, you're living eternally. Is that right?
Yes.
Well, then why do I say, do you want to live or you want to die? It's an illusion, right? And it's a false illusion because they have no choice. They have to do whatever I create them doing. Now, if I am a weak creator, if I am a creator who doesn't have the strength of my own creation conviction, then, of course, I'm not sure whether to live or to die. Shakespeare's statement, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it is nobler to be a good man or a bad man. And, you know, in the philosophy of human psychology, there the phrase is often made that it is better to do something than to do nothing. It is better to do something than to do nothing. Well, think about this for yourself. It is better for you to be one-pointed, non-judgmental, you know, not possessed. What else we got up there? Untouchable. Than it is to be wishy-washy. 1 minute yes and 1 minute no. Because what value is it to be 1 minute yes and 1 minute no? Could Anthony or Alexander the Great, could he live eternally if he wanted to? He is. But why did he die? Because that was the attitude of the people at the time, still is, to die. Now, do we really die?
No.
And if we don't really die, then what sort of game are we playing?
Doesn't really matter.
So if I say to you, play the game with me, I would be sharing with you the concept of how to be your own creator. Now, in my world, I create you all eternally. And when you die, I stand there and I laugh and I laugh and I laugh and I think to myself, you think you're dead. Ha, 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 ha. Watch what happens when you wake up. You'll say, where'd everybody go? You heard the story of Rip Van Winkle, haven't you? This is in early American days, I think Nathaniel Horn, Hawthorne had written these stories. And the Headless Horseman and so forth in the early parts of America here. And the idea being that Rip Van Winkle went off to the woods to hunt. And he was a rather casual fellow. And he had five or six kids and a wife. And the wife did all the work and took care of all the things and fed the kids and did these things. And he just went off and played in the woods. Well, one time, he fell asleep. And when he awoke, he was in a beautiful elfin glade. And there were all of these little gremlins, these little people who had their pot of gold. And, you know, this and he wanted the pot of gold, and he wanted these things. But that wasn't the part of the story. The part of the story was that finally his friends said, go home. And so he woke up and went home. Well, he had a long beard. And when he went home, the town had changed considerably. 50 years had passed. And they remembered Rip Van Winkle, and they remembered his wife, and they said, yeah, some of your children are here, some of those children are here, and some are there, and so forth. And the story went on in that regard, that he could sleep away 50 years and then come back and find it all quite changed. Now, do you do that? Do you, so to speak, die or sleep and come back? And come back as a little baby and find everything quite changed? And Paramahansa Yogananda, when he was living in India with his parents, I believe it's in this book, Autobiography of Yoga, he tells about that he believes there was a family nearby where he had been living, and he was their child. And his parents didn't have time for that nonsense, but finally they went over there and checked. And sure enough, the people had had a child, and the child had died at a specific time, at the time he was born, and da-da-da-da-da. It filled the story of what he was saying. Now, is it true? Is that one in a million possibilities? Or is it reality? You see, when you point your fingers at other people, and you say that they have to live your life, it may or may not be true. But when you point your fingers at yourself and you say, this is me, this is who I am, and this is what I am, and this is what I love, it's wonderful. So it's a privilege and a responsibility to take responsibility and control for what we say about ourselves. I think the biggest thing we're saying at this particular point in junction is, are we the creator of our world? If we are the creator of our world, did we create our world? Did we create ourselves in our world? Did we create other people in our world? Do we give other people in our world the right to die, the right to live? Yes, we do. And why do we have some that never die and some that die, you know, quite easily? Why do some people have to die in such pain and unhappiness and other people die just, you know, go to sleep? Why is it that some people just disappear? Are never seen again? Are they playing again yet another game? Quite likely they are. But think about these things. This is the universality of all. And if we are the creator of our world, why not settle down and create the Euro countries as a harmonious, wonderful program that sort of goes all over the world and becomes a Euro world where all the world is in harmony? Because, you see, when the politicians want a bigger country, then they want war, and then they go against other nations that they think they can take in to build up their nation. But if no nation needs to have a bigger nation for better economics, then there's no need for wars. There's no need for going and controlling this. There's no need for spending money on armaments and so forth. People are perfectly happy living in their towns and in their areas. Think about this, if you will, for a minute. Here you have Emmettingen and Zurich and other little towns. How many of them are scrabbling and squabbling with each other to pick up each other, to buy each other, to say, now, Zurich includes this and this and this and this town, you know? When they do that, they get in trouble. Because those towns are incorporated and they have a right to remain sacrosanct. And if you can buy out everybody in town and take it over and make it into your bigger Zurich, that's okay. But it doesn't have to be war. It's all economics. And it's a beautiful thing. And this is what the world is, all economics. And if we get away from economics, we get into peace and harmony and love and right action. And then all the fingers pointing back at us are pointing back the love, peace, joy, and harmony right action, truth, goodness. And the finger that's pointing out is just the nozzle on the hole saying, have some love and peace and joy and harmony and right action and truth. And that's kind of nice, isn't it? Well, have a lovely evening and think good thoughts about yourself, because you are exceedingly good and wonderful people. I love you. I love you. I love you.